Hi there. Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. Steve here. And since 1988, New Life has been transforming lives one life at a time. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's most hard, difficult places. One way we do this is through the live program that we share with our listeners here on this podcast. Now, you'll get to listen to callers bringing us their challenges, and our panel of counselors and psychologists provide insight, which you will learn from too. Let's go to today's podcast episode.
Welcome to New Life Live. It's Chris Williams sitting in for Steve today, and I have with me Dr. Jackie Mac-Harris.
Hello.
And Dr. Sherry Keffer.
Hey, great to be with you too.
All right.
As always.
I would love to lead in with more conversation, but I would love a little bit more for our wisdom to be shared with others. So we're going to go straight to the phones right
nice.
Away. We're just going to pull the trigger right now.
Yeah.
So, all right. Callie in Landover, Maryland, listening on WAVA. Callie, are you there?
I am here, and thank you all for being there to be here for me.
Well, we're all here together, here and there. And so what do you have for us today?
I have a horrible fear of driving over the highway, the interstate, beltways. I take the long way. What would take 30 minutes would take me like an hour, and comfortably, as long as I'm playing my music, I'm fine. I listen to K-Love when I'm driving.
Nice.
But I don't know where this fear has come from, and my friends have been great. You know, I can do it when I have a passenger, when my friends and I were going places.
Mm.
But since after COVID, no one is doing anything much. Pretty much my closest friends have just really moved around to long places like Texas and Florida and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But when I talk to them, they're constantly saying, you need Callie, just go do it. And I recently did it and freaked out and mm-hmm. pulled over, put my blinker lights on, and I pulled over. And after about 20 minutes, because I'm like, okay, Callie, come on, you can do this. No fear, no fear. You got Jesus with you. And with all of that, even with prayer, I still freak out.
Yeah.
A cop pulled up behind me, and he asked if I was in danger. He looked in the car, and they asked me to pop my hood and asked me to get out of the vehicle. And I'm thinking, I'm not a drug smuggler. And another cop car pulled up. And so they had me in front of my vehicle, and they checked the trunk, and then they come back, and he said, listen, I had to ask you to do that, because usually when we, a situation like yours, we would think that someone was being held hostage.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, no. And he said, no one has ever said, oh, I pulled over because I'm afraid to continue on the beltway.
Mm.
And I said, well, I am, and I'm so sorry. I'm just trying to work up the nerve. And he did get me off the shoulder, and I knew where I was. I was in Laurel, Maryland, so yay, mm-hmm. I know how to get back. But I took the two-hour route back home.
And so, Callie, how long has this been going on for you?
You know, I was sitting here wondering, I'm like, okay, in the beginning, you know what, it was before cancer, but that's been over 9 years ago. When I was battling cancer, that I had stage 3, and it kept metastasizing.
So it's been
medication.
So Callie, let me jump in.
You would get lost.
Yeah. So it's been there for about at least 9 years.
Maybe a decade.
Yeah.
9 years, yeah.
Do you ever have any thoughts?
Ignored it.
What's the thoughts going through your mind when you're on a bridge?
Oh, Lord. I'm just thinking about it. Did you all see the news? The Bay Bridge was so packed, and then there was an accident. Okay, that's not your question. My question is, oh, God, I don't want to miss my exit. I don't want to fall off the bridge. Height. Oh, my God.
Fall off the bridge. Okay. We're going to have to go to a break, so hold that thought.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. In the midst of all of these paralyzing fears, whether they're reasonable or not, we're going to talk about a part of the body that is impervious to reason. It doesn't care about reason. And we're going to help understand what's going on and then give you some helpful direction. So, Callie, thank you for calling in today. We are going to go to a break right now, but stay with us, and we'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. We're talking with Callie, and Callie is struggling with something, Callie, that is not uncommon. And it is.
Oh, Chris, thank you.
It's really not. I mean, I'm so sorry that.
It's embarrassing, though.
Yeah, but listen, we all have it. We can all be embarrassed together, at least, right? Yeah. We will have these unwelcomed visiting terrors in our life. And not all of us, but there's a lot of us that will. And again, it won't make sense. It oftentimes not connected to reality, but in our bodies, deep down, it feels real. It thinks, my goodness, it smells real, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, your nervous system doesn't know the difference. Your nervous system can't tell the difference between this idea or thought of driving off the edge of that bridge or having an accident and it, you know, being stuck on the bridge and imagining that. Your nervous system can't tell the difference between the imagination and reality. And so when you get into your imagination, and you're probably a highly sensitive person, it feels very threatening. And so that threat you're responding to by avoiding it, which is what we do. I think you need someone to work with you. You're trying to do exposure therapy all by yourself. And you're not necessarily tapping into what the original unsafe space is. What's the original fear? Where did this fear of bridges come from? It may be locked in your mind, and something like EMDR could be really helpful to unlock it. But I think you need some support as you're working through addressing this possible phobia.
I have so much hope for you, Callie. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many?
What is MDR?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about it. Okay. Because Dr. Jackie is right. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a very long word. But basically, your situation makes complete sense. When you dealt with cancer, your brain wired in some negative beliefs that sound like this, because that's what the brain does as an attempt to save you. It wired in, I think, one of two beliefs, maybe a combination of these two. I'm in danger, and I'm not in control. So those two, so when the police officer was looking in your car for a hostage, do you know who he missed? You.
No.
You. You are being held hostage by these two beliefs. I'm in danger.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not in control. And I can't tell you how many people have come into my office that I have worked with that are afraid of going over bridges, of driving on certain parts of the freeway. And they come in and they think that that's the problem. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem underneath the problem. And that is finding out that trauma event that caused you to have this belief, and it got coupled, it got connected, it got wedded with bridges.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Dr. Jackie and Chris have been saying. Your body doesn't know the difference, but you know what? This is the beautiful truth about it. You can work with someone like myself, someone who's certified or a consultant in EMDR, and we can look to see if there's someone in your area that's one of our New Life therapists. But you can go in to a handful of sessions focusing in on that, and you can find freedom. Because the brain needs to move past it. Like, the brain needs to be able to tell yourself, you didn't die from cancer. It's over. I'm safe now.
And I just had a thought. I wonder if there were times when you went to the doctor or got a phone call from the doctor. Hopefully you were in person when you got that diagnosis, but that there was a bridge involved in that visit. Because it sounds like before the diagnosis, there were no problems with the bridges. And after the diagnosis, there were. And so what Dr. Sherry said is the bridge got coupled with the fear of being not having control and being unsafe. And working with someone with EMDR could help you to figure out where that coupling happened and help you break through that.
So
does that resonate for you?
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
It gives us so much hope, because I think, you know, Callie, there's so many of us that try to, like,
muscle it,
spiritualize it. We try to, like, spiritualize our way through it. And you know what? We get more frustrated because we feel like, what's wrong with my faith now? Yeah. It's not working.
That's what I've been going through.
Yeah.
And people at church were like, oh, you know, you got to pray through it. I'm like, in my head, I'm saying, shut up. I've already done it.
Right? I know.
So my pastor, I just wish you all not be so, I need human.
Yes.
This is about science and how God made you.
Well, and Callie, we wouldn't want you to pray through your cancer treatment alone. Just pray through it. We'd want you to get treatment for the cancer.
Yes.
But the beautiful thing is, I am clear. Always.
But hold on, Callie, you're missing my point. The point is that with cancer, you go get medical treatment that works.
Right.
Yeah.
They were supportive of that, right?
Because
there
are cells in your body that are working against you rather than for you, that God's grace of human development and ingenuity has created treatments for.
Is true with our mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you now have a mind, something in your brain that is working against you rather than for you. So God, through human ingenuity and his grace, has allowed treatments to help you through that. One of those treatments that is really powerful is called EMDR. So what we're going to do is you're going to hang out on the phone. We have a great network of therapists, I believe, in your area. We want to connect you with a therapist. We'll try to figure out the EMDR certified therapist. We're also going to send you a copy of 100 Days from Fear and Freedom in the Arterburn series of devotionals. And that's not going to be your only thing. That's just going to be a supplement. That's just going to be something that comes alongside as you're going through this process.
Oh, thank you all for being here for me. It has just been so long. And that recent episode with the police officers.
For sure.
Freaked me out.
For
sure. Okay. But then when I walked in, I heard you all talking about fear. I said, okay, God, I'm going to call, and if I sound goofy, so what?
No, you sound actually...
I'm sure someone's been helped by your sharing your experience.
You've led so many other people to a greater understanding of what's happening in them. And y'all, we're not crazy. We're not weird.
We're not weak.
We're not weak. We're not unfaithful. There are things sometimes in our brain that work against us rather than for us. It's as simple as that. So let's not over-spiritualize that, and let's just go get the help
Let
that
us
we
know
need.
How you are after
Absolutely.
You do your EMDR. Call us back and say, I'm not only cancer-free, I'm scary bridge-free. I'm good. I can drive now.
So thank you so much for calling in, Callie, and we love you and cheering you on in your healing journey. Absolutely. We're going to go to Coco in Columbus, Ohio, listening on the podcast. Coco, are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. Well, what's going on today?
Hello, everyone. Okay, so this is my question. Well, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and we were not given lots of opportunity to display, like, various emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We often had to stifle our feelings and our emotions. But my question is, in dating and selecting a partner, I'm really not sure how to really discern what I'm truly feeling, since I feel so underdeveloped in that area. Sometimes I'm not sure if just the desire to want to feel something can draw me to a person because they feel something for me, or if I'm truly feeling something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of like my question, how to really discern what I'm truly feeling.
Well, I first got to say, you have tremendous insight and awareness, Coco.
Yeah.
Like you, I grew up in one of those alcoholic homes. And here's this interesting thing about alcohol. There's a contagion to this ailment. And one of the contagions is this. Alcohol numbs the emotional centers, right? And so then it creates an intolerance, a lack of resilience for emotions. So if the alcoholic is in charge, he or she is not just shutting down their own emotions. They're going to do everything they can to shut down everyone else's emotions. Because if you feel, and it causes me to feel, that's not okay. So I, absolutely. So great, great awareness on that. But Jackie, what do you think?
Well, and I, same, Chris, grew up in that same kind of home. And so I became an emotional avoider. I love that you are asking this question because you're looking at you and figuring out you so that when you are connecting with someone, you can, you know whether or not it's it's about what you're feeling or if you're just taking in what this other person is feeling. I'm just excited for you that you have that insight. There's a book called How We Love that breaks down our attachment styles. Have you ever heard of that book?
Is that the one by Mylan?
Yes, Mylan and Kay Yerkovich.
Yeah.
So How We Love can teach you about your love style, how that imprint got laid down, and then also ways to change that up, to communicate in a different way. But getting into some therapy and working on being in your own body, being present in your own emotions, I have these four questions that I ask my clients to ask themselves, especially the emotional avoiders. So every day, sit 5 minutes at different times of the day and ask yourself, what do I feel? Where do I feel that in my body? Why do I feel that? And what do I need? Because I can't tell you how many times I've sat with a couple and one or the other has said, when I ask, what do you feel? They've said, I don't know. And then I've asked, well, what do you need right now? Well, I don't know, but if he loved me, he would know. Well, that's just ridiculous because if you've been you your whole life and you don't know what you feel or need, how dare you expect someone outside of you to know what you feel or need? So you've got to practice being with you and experiencing your emotions, learning to name your emotions, learning to associate the sensations in your body with particular emotions. And then once you have a grasp on how you feel, then you'll be able to trust that emotion when you're with a person, that desire to connect with them as your desire and not just their desire to connect with you.
Okay. But I'm kind of concerned that asking, what do I feel? I feel like I'm going to flip that in my brain and say, what is it that I think?
Okay. Yeah. That's again, good insight. Because that's where you've been taught to go to. You can be performative and answer the right questions, and that's how we have avoided the danger of the alcoholic home, is to think. We're thinking and we're assessing other people's feelings and figuring out ways to fix problems so that there aren't any feelings, and that way nobody gets in trouble. So it's going to be challenging. Go online and Google feeling word list, and if we could send, do you own How We Love already?
Yes.
Okay. So in How We Love, in the book, there's a list of soul words. And you can go on the website, howwelove.com, and go to freebies. And you can download the soul words list there, too. Make some copies of soul words list. If that list doesn't speak to you, you can Google and find a feelings words list. And start sitting with that list and looking at it and going, do I feel that or do I feel that? And moving through the variations of emotions.
Yeah.
Okay, but okay. One other thing. I'm asking many questions. I suppose I only ask one, but it's like okay. So some emotions, I feel like I can't really discern if that's what I'm
feeling. So that's all a part of that. So Coco. Yes, dive into How We Love. We're also going to send you a copy of the Emotional Freedom Workbook. I'm going to give you one suggestion. A good way to get in touch with our emotions is art. Music and movies can access that for us. So I want you to go back to that and go back to what moves me in art. And with that, we're going to come right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. And yeah, we were just finishing up with Coco. You know, a lot of us struggle with being able to access our emotions. Mm-hmm. And even to the point where we'll judge them. You know, feeling is bad or weak or whatever weird things we do about this very human experience. I have this acronym, AID, A-I-D. We need to be aware. We need to be aware that we are feeling people, and that makes us human, and we all have it. Then we need identification, and that's what we're helping Coco with. Identify, put a name to this and know what it is. Mm-hmm. And then we also need disclosure. We need to talk about with other people what's going on inside of us. And that really helps build what we refer to as emotional intelligence. Yeah. And so that's what we want to do with Coco. And
yeah, she might need somebody, a therapist, to sit with her and help her learn the different feelings. And because I think the last thing she said was, well, how do I discern what that feeling is if I don't know the feelings? And I think therapy is really good for that.
Absolutely. And it takes time. Yeah, sometimes frustratingly so, but it takes time. So again, Coco, we cheer you on. Greatly appreciate you calling in today. You know, coming up here in June, we have the Restored Workshop. Again, we do not need, women, you do not need to suffer in silence. You do not need to suffer in the pain of your own experience and the chaos of your own mind in betrayal trauma. And so that's why we put together and really offer the Restored Workshop. What I also want to say about this is it is through your contributions, it's through you, listener, that we're able to provide these services, provide these ministries, and ultimately provide these doorways to health and healing. And here's one example of that. Sherry's going to share a testimony from Restored.
Yeah, this is from Liza. And Liza said, the Restored Workshop validated a lot of thoughts and emotions I had been dealing with. It gave each woman tools to move forward in whatever direction God was guiding us in. I was hugely blessed to be among those women whose husband did attend EMB prior to my coming to Restore. Because I saw an incredible transformation of heart in my husband through EMB, I was encouraged to come to Restore. I wanted both of us to do whatever God was offering to heal and make our marriage stronger. It is a process. P.S. My husband was probably the only man in EMB who is an atheist. Please pray for him to know the Lord as his personal Savior.
There is so much there. One, again, we don't have to stay stuck in these situations and painful. The other thing that I want you to hear about us at New Life is no one is disqualified based on their belief. Mm-hmm. No one is disqualified. This is for everyone. And this ministry of God's, again, healing and health and growth is only possible by your donations. We offer scholarships. Listen, if you're out there and you're thinking, I would love to go to Restore, I need to go to Restore, but I just don't know if I can afford it. Again, it's online, and please give us a call. We do have scholarship funds for this. If you're a person who's benefited from our workshops or our telephone or our, you know, call-ins and New Life Live, anything that we offer, please help move this needle forward and God's work forward in this. Thank you so much for that. Again, I just want to mention there is a matching gift right now. And so anything you give right now is doubled. And that matching gift is $325,000. I believe we're about halfway there. So help us match the full $325,000. With that, we're going to go right back to the phones, and we're going to go to Ray in Annapolis, Maryland. Ray, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Hear you well. So what's going on over there in midshipman land, right? That's where the Naval Academy is?
That's correct.
Excellent. Well, what's going on with you today?
Yeah, my question is about friendship. And I have some friends that I've had for a very, very long time. One's a family member and one's a friend that I had from college. We became closer friends after college. But we lived in the same city at one time, and then my closest friend and myself, we moved away, and then my my family member remained in the city that, you know, we were in together. Recently, my closest friend has moved back to the city that we were in together. Excuse me. And, you know, they have formed a friendship, sometimes unbeknownst to me. I think my closest friend still has family in this city. And at times when she would go home to her family, she would also see my family member. So they have an independent friendship.
That's apart from you.
That's apart from me, correct.
Yeah.
So what I find, though, is when when the three of us are together, I'm sometimes having a really, really hard time of feeling connected to my closest friend, and I'm having a hard time with the trio. I'm usually very one-on-one in trips, and I'm trying to figure out. We just took a trip recently. It went well, but I think 3 days is my max, and then it kind of goes, you know, haywire. And so my thoughts are, you know, just keep it 3 days and don't do too much. Because we do like to travel. we do like to travel. So my question really is, how do I handle my emotions, my feelings towards the threesome?
Yes.
I'm really more of a one-on-one kind of girl. And then how do I not feel disconnected from my close friends? My family member is very magnetic. She likes the heart of the party.
Yeah.
So I don't feel disconnected from her because she's kind of in your face. You can't avoid her.
Well, Ray, these relationships can get really complicated because we do relationships differently, and relationships shift and change over time. I'm so glad you're calling in because, my goodness, this is, again, one of those human experiences that get complicated and we can get lost in. So we're going to help you get found in this complicated friendship.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live, and Ray is struggling with a friendship triangle, and we oftentimes do. These tough things about relationships can shift and change and morph, and we all do them differently. So, friends, how do we help her out?
Dr. Sherry?
Well, it's funny. We were talking, Ray, on the break, you know, just kind of preemptively wondering about your heart, and truly, it can feel like when there's three people, like your friend and your sister, like an air traffic controller with two airplanes trying to land at the same time. And you're doing your best to try to navigate the emotional energy, the conversations, the dinners, the things that you're doing. But my main question to you is more of a wondering about your heart. And really wondering if you were to float back into earlier seasons of your life, even those seasons with your sister, were there times where you felt like, I'm not enough? I'm not enough. I just feel like I'm always trying to keep up or compete. And that's why the one-on-one seems so much easier.
So it's not my sister. It's a family member, not a sister.
Ah, okay.
And a friend.
Did you grow up as a single? Did you grow up as an only child, or do you have siblings?
No, I have siblings.
Okay,
I'm the youngest, though.
Okay,
I'm the youngest.
And did you grow up feeling seen and heard, or more kind of unseen and unheard in your home?
Yeah, probably the latter. Unseen, unheard.
And so moments like this, especially as the youngest, right, with all the other stuff that's going on in your household, you can feel very missed. And so having that exclusive one-on-one time almost brings your heart attachment security. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've got your attention. I don't have to fight for your attention, but I can hear you and you can hear me. And yet, as the youngest in a family where you didn't feel seen or heard, this other family member that is magnetic, you know, an extrovert and seems to always draw the attention to herself, it can feel like a competition, or you kind of can feel invisible at those moments. And it just takes a lot more energy to bring yourself into the conversation, because you probably grew up feeling missed, like, it's just too hard to try. I'm just going to kind of be quiet. I'm just going to pull back. And then it can replicate itself as adults, like it did in mm-hmm. your childhood.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Just to give more context there, I think as a child, when I say unseen, unheard, I think it was just, you know, there was a dynamic in terms of my birth. But I do think that for me, it was just, I was a quiet child. I was a shy child. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed, you know, sort of an independence in that. I don't think it was perhaps, you know, some of the what you've just mentioned. I think it was just more or less my way of
your temperament
of moving through the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I was going to say. Sometimes it's just how we're made. That was my thought was, what if this is just how you're made? What if you're maybe more highly sensitive to emotional input, and so one-on-one works better for you? You don't have to work as hard. And trying to navigate right. with these two friends requires a lot of pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and what feels like a lot of work. And then you're exhausted, because introverts, they recharge by having alone time, whereas extroverts recharge mm-hmm. by being with people and being out and a little gregarious. It's just differences. Right. Neither are wrong, neither are bad. And if you set the 3-day rule for yourself and that works for you, and you know that you can be with them for 3 days and enjoy it, and by the fourth day you're going to get cranky, then that's you giving yourself what you need. Trust your body. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with needing to have less people time when you're feeling overwhelmed or peopled out. How do you manage your emotions, you said, though? It sounds like you are managing them. You guys had a great time on the trip. It's just maybe learning to tolerate right. the discomfort. Just learning to tolerate it. Because if you can sit there with the two of them and they're chatting back and forth and you have nothing to input, that might be okay.
Mm-hmm. But let me just make sure that I give you the heart of the matter. I think it's the closeness of my friend
yes.
that I feel like I'm losing.
Yes, yeah, so
not losing, that's strong of a term, but
you're just not feeling like the depth of connection with her in those moments.
But do you feel like you're competing?
Correct.
Competing with your family member? Why do you feel like you're losing her?
Because
the truth of it is you could call her and go out to lunch with her every day.
And the emotions, we ebb and flow, right? Even in marriage, we don't always feel the same depth of connection or the passion mm-hmm. or the intimacy because we're further apart. Sure. We haven't spent as much time together, or we spend too much time together. So it again, sure. we may just need to not place judgment on it and let it just be what it is. It doesn't have to be a good thing or a bad thing. Your friendship is your friendship. It's a long-standing mm-hmm. friendship. And sometimes you guys are going to be spending a lot of time together and feeling really, really close and like you're on the same page about things, and sometimes not. She's mm-hmm. living further away from you, so she is literally further away right. from you.
But I'm wondering about okay. your fear. Do you fear, I'm just not as fun as this other family member that's magnetic?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. No.
Okay. So then what is stopping you from pursuing this friend, this old friend, and seeing her more often to secure that fear that you have?
You know, just life. We've both got obligations that keep us in the city that we're in.
No, so, I understand. I understand, but that's an mm-hmm. excuse. I'm going to press in a little bit. What is keeping you from calling her 3 or 4 times a week? What's stopping you? You're calling us because you're afraid, you're bugged that this relationship doesn't feel equitable. But what's stopping you mm-hmm. from pursuing her?
I'm being honest. She has a new high demanding position role, and so the times of just being spontaneous and calling are no longer.
So you miss your friend.
Yeah.
You're not getting to spend as much time with her, and you miss her.
So Ray, this is a hard experience, and again it's very common. And that is, there is seasons in life, as Jackie was referring to, where our relationships shift and change. There's also other people that we have friendships, that our friends have friendships with. And so this is a constant changing, moving thing. And what this requires is that we're going to have to grieve. We really are. The closest in this season that we have right now is not going to be it. And that could be outside of my control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this follow-up question to that, Jackie asked the previous caller, I think it was really good. You know, I love those four questions. I'm going to repeat them to you. What do I feel? Where do I feel it? Why do I feel it? And then what do I need?
And the thing I didn't say to the other caller that I want to tack on here, that fourth question, what do I need? That's for you to answer. What do I need? And then I go meet that need for me. Because so often we get to the what do I need, and we are looking for something external to meet that
need.
Yeah,
like I need my friend to be more available, where that's not within our control.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of, I need to call her. Mm-hmm. I need to send her a card. Yeah. I need to call her and just leave a voicemail message. Even if she's busy and isn't able to talk, I just need to say, hey, I just want you to know I love you. I was thinking about you today. I just need to go to Hallmark and buy three cards and send one, you know, once a week this month. And pursue her, even if you can't have her. Just put some love her way.
That way she, even though she's in this new high demand job, she doesn't feel like she's lost you either. Like this is you supporting her as she's growing into this new role, new position. And so she has the space to do what she needs to do to be excellent in this role and know that she's not losing her friends because she can't be there for them the way that she wants to. I went through that when I went through my master's program. I told my friends, I love you, but I'm not going to be around for the next 3 years because I work full time, I have a family, and now I'm in a master's program. And so I could not see my friends the way that I normally did. I was seeing them once a year. And then I finished that off and went into a doctoral program. So here we go, another 3 years. My goal was with certain people for them to be there when I finished, and they were.
Yeah, so let me jump in because we're facing the music, as they say here. And so, Ray, the friendships in your life are really important, and I want to honor that and also honor that they shift and they change and we have to understand them in context. So we're going to send you a copy of Townsend's latest book, People Fuel. And that's going to give categories for these different things and friendships that are going on in our life. And I hope that can really help you and guide you as you move forward in navigating the complexities of our friendships and our relationships. So, Ray, again, thank you so much for calling in. And we're going to be right back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. Hey, if you're out there and you're considering giving, please consider. Again, we have a matching gift going on, so anything that you give will be doubled. We're also, in the month of June, giving away Dr. Dave Stoop's final book, Living Strong, Finishing Well. Such unbelievable amount of wisdom. In reading that book, I can hear Dave's unbelievably wise and strong voice speaking into me. It will be an incredible blessing to you, as he has been to the rest of us. So I just want you to be aware of that. Give, and we will give back a wonderful gift to you. We're going to go to a final call today. We're going to go to Vince, listening in Washington, D.C. on WAVA. Vince, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. What's going on today, Vince?
Yeah, I was calling because I wanted to get your advice on marriage. Believe me, my wife, we might be unequally yoked, and it's caused a lot of distrust and stress in the marriage over issues that are that we just don't see eye to eye on. However, we're like newly married. We've been married for like almost 2 years now, and you know, we agreed to, when we were dating, we agreed that we, you know, we were going to carry out our marriage in a biblical manner.
So Vince, let me ask you, what exactly do you mean by unequally yoked? Because I'm going to be honest, I oftentimes hear that weaponized rather than as a tool for understanding. So what exactly do we mean by unequally yoked?
Fair enough. You know, we come from, she's primarily grew up in a Catholic background. I have more of a Protestant background. You know, I've been through more biblical based type, foundation, and I noticed that was something that she lacked when we were first dating and whatnot.
Vince, we have only a couple of minutes, and we really want to help you. So, can you just tell us, like, specifically where the problem is? Where's the conflict with the two of you? Something specific.
Number one, submission. We go back and forth about, like, Ephesians, a scripture in there about submission and love.
What does submission mean to you?
Well, just like the scripture says.
I'm so glad you said that. Okay, man to man, ready? I'm going to blow this up right now. Scripture never tells us to submit to a position. Now, we're going to get a lot of calls. I'm sorry, Larry. Scripture tells us to submit to a description that points to a position.
But it also says to submit one to
another. Yes.
It's a mutual.
Yeah.
So where is the problem?
But let me finish that out. Mm-hmm. Because when we look at a position, we miss the point. So if I'm to submit to Christ, Christ has to be trustworthy, right? If a wife is going to submit to me, and to your point, Sherry, it absolutely says submit one to another before it goes into the rest of it.
Which requires we're both trustworthy.
Yes, mm-hmm. There is a description of characteristics that are crucially important that make it trustworthy to submit to. That's what we're submitting to. We're submitting to a description of characteristics, mm-hmm. Yeah. That support our well-being, support the will of God in our life.
So then I wonder, though, what are we talking about submitting to, Vince? Is it just in general, say we are going to do this, and she says, no, we're not?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not talking about, like, trivial things like, you know, what are we going to have for dinner or what are we dressing? Like, this is more so related to foundational principles that require, you know, if we get to a point where we have to make a decision in life, that's like a major decision, whether it be about children, raising children, or health matters, or just, you know, financial stuff. You know, it's...
Hey, Vince, quick question. Quick question. How long?
Back and forth.
Yeah, hear me out. How long did you guys date before you got married?
About 2 years.
Okay. And did you guys have any conversations around this when you were dating?
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to get to. That's the conflict, is that I feel, it's sad to say this, but I feel bamboozled in a way that I was led to believe that my wife would be on the same page with, you know, because we would share similar viewpoints.
But here's the thing, Vince. Here's the thing. You don't have
the side of marriage.
You don't have the same viewpoint. If I asked the two of you to stand up in a room together, facing each other, without turning your heads one way or the other, and to eyes towards one another, describe the room to me, you would describe it differently. Not because either of you are lying, not because you're not trustworthy, but because you have a different vantage point. Both perspectives matter. Okay. And so if the idea of submission is that one person has the say, that might be why it's not working. And I think the bamboozled part, most of us got married and the day after we're like, oh, who are you?
Yeah, what happened here?
Because we have expectations of marriage that aren't actually even, we're not even aware of until married.
He wants to throw in one more thing. Go.
So I'm a very straightforward person, and I really made sure to lay these issues out, like, up front when we first started dating. Like, there's no room for, you know, to say that you didn't understand. Like, I was very clear about my viewpoints and topics that, you know, of contention that we are now having. And so, you know, I feel like, yeah, well, she had the opportunity to express her views, and we could have a dialogue, and if it didn't work, then, you know, maybe we wouldn't have got married or whatever, or maybe we would have worked it out. But now it's like on the other side of marriage, now that we're married, like, it's like I feel like maybe it was I feel like a bit of manipulation was there. Like, maybe she just did it to do the dog and pony show, and now that we're married, like, okay, she's gonna revert.
It's unfortunate because those thoughts will taint the relationship as well, because thoughts, it's what you know, take every thought captive. And so if your thoughts are of being tricked, then you're going to feel tricked. I tell people to look at the vows. If you did the traditional vows in sickness and in health, for better or for worse, it is in the vows. The clues are in the vows that it's going to be hard. It's not going to look like what you think it's going to look like, because your expectations, even if you laid them all out, she couldn't have understood what you meant because she's not you. How We Love could help you all understand how you got to be where you are and who you are, and maybe consider coming to our
intimacy and marriage.
Weekend workshop, because there's a lot to learn before you throw in the towel on this marriage. There needs to be, I believe in marriage, radical transparency, radical acceptance, and radical forgiveness if you want it to work. And most people have a very hard time with all three of those things. And so she may not feel like she got what she saw in the brochure either. But now you guys you've made the covenant. What do you want to do about it? How do you get to know each other as who you actually are right now and learn to love that person the way Jesus loves each of you?
Yeah. Sherry, any parting words for that?
I think you did well. I think the workshop, y'all need to lift up the hood of that car and start figuring out how this power struggle started and what the expectations are that really aren't real.
You know, marriage is hard because we do change and shift over time, and getting to learn each other and learn ourselves and figure out how to mutually submit is a lot of hard work. And so, again, that Intimacy and Marriage Workshop is July 28th in Washington, D.C. Thank you all for being with us today, and we wish you very well. See you till next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.